Hi, today is July 8th, 2018. This is Movies Podcast 260. I'm Todd Agasso, working with good friend John Westfall. And I think I'm going to title this episode Todd's Cranky Cast.
Yes, I've already been warned that Todd is cranky today.
Yep.
And I shall endeavor to not make him any more so than he already is.
And you know what? Part of the things that's making me cranky, I don't have in our show notes, but I mentioned it to John in passing, is that I foolishly upgraded to the latest version of Skype for macOS. And you know, every time there's an upgrade to Skype for anything, it's worse than the last version.
Yes.
Yeah. We may have to find another way to talk to do these podcasts. But anyway, so the latest version of Skype moves all of the settings to places you don't know.
Unknown.
Yeah. And it seems to get rid of a lot of the settings that you did have, like speakers. Okay, so audio and video settings, for example, lets me set the speakers. Okay, default device, that's fine. My headset in this case. You can test the audio. I wonder if you can hear it if I audio test. Can you hear that? Or is it just my side?
Nope, that's just your side.
Okay, so it's that bing, 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 you know, that thing. And it lets me select my camera. What it doesn't let me see is which microphone I'm using in the audio setting. So, stupid, you decide. It's just, okay, and you look at preferences, I don't know which microphone I'm using. I literally do not know which microphone Skype is pointing at. It's really stupid. Microsoft, of course, you can get easily to emoji and symbols now. So, you know, there's that going for it. But yeah, seriously, audio and visual settings, I cannot see which microphone I'm using. Default device. Crazy. Well, let's hope I'm using my microphone, because I really don't know. How do I sound, by the way? Do I sound like I'm using a good mic, or?
You sound okay, but there's a bit of a squeakiness, and I don't know where that's coming from.
Squeakiness. Squeakiness. Interesting. Anyway, I shall add that to the show notes. Ranting about Skype for Mac OS update. Okay, so the next rant is, you know, every weekend before John and I do this podcast, I kind of go through Tech Memes River to see things that might have interested me during the week that I didn't note in our show notes, or just new stuff that I, you know, didn't see. And here's what I found in Tech Meme. Absolutely nothing. Of interest to me. Let me rephrase it. Of interest to me to talk about. So there was, you know, a bunch of stuff about blockchain, which is interesting, but I don't really feel qualified to talk much about it, except I know how to spell it. Tech investment, which I would hesitate to. No, we would not even hesitate. I simply wouldn't. It's just dangerous territory to talk about. And dealing with disinformation, which is very interesting, but again, it's something that I really can't say I'm an expert in, except I know what it is, I think, and that nobody's doing anything about it. So then I listen, you know, and I listen to other podcasts. Other tech podcasts as well as non-tech podcasts, and it's kind of more of the same, you know, people talking about social media and blockchain and not so much tech investment, but and disinformation and, you know, fake news and all that stuff. So where does that leave a podcast like this one that I always thought, and I don't know if John agrees with this, but I always thought it was mostly about, you know, actual stuff, gadgets, software, tips, tricks, travel tips, you know, like last week's,
well,
John's tech travel tips.
And the thing that I kind of think of when I come to this is, I still remember back in the 2000s when every year a new major thing was coming to smartphones.
Yeah.
You know, one year it was Bluetooth, and then 18 months later everyone had Bluetooth. And then another year it was Wi-Fi, another year it was GPS, another year it was big battery, long life, the next year it was big screen.
And don't remember when cameras were a new thing on phones.
Yeah, cameras. Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of the difference between it has a camera and it has a usable camera.
Right.
Versus it has a good camera. So we got kind of spoiled for a number of years there where every year you could be thinking, okay, what do I want? I want a better camera. I want a bigger screen. I want longer battery life. I want this. I want that. And then somewhere around, I guess, 2014-15, it just sort of seems like we have everything that we knew we wanted.
Yeah.
You know, there's always this distinction about things that we don't know we want. Yes, there's probably some of those still out there, but everything we knew we wanted, we have. And so that's where I think we're at this rut, where there's certain technologies that are emerging. So things like 3D printing and VR, AR, all of those sorts of things where we know that those are on the horizon somewhere. We don't know what the compelling use is. So, for example, no one's come up with the Kindle for 3D printing. So right. If there was a 3D printer that came fully loaded with thousands of little parts and, you know, it was why go to the hardware store and get all these things when you can hit a button and they print overnight and you've got them all, or, you know, something like that, then I could see people getting excited. But
that'd be cool.
That would be cool. There's not much that's just been invited or, you know, invented lately that does that. So that's kind of where I think we're at. We're trying to figure out, we don't know what we want yet. We don't have as many visionaries as we did in the past to show us what we want.
Yeah.
So we're more or less happy until something cool happens. And that's why I think blockchain has taken off and everyone's talking about, blockchain this, blockchain that. It's because it's something new and interesting. But the majority of people still have no idea how it's going to interact with their lives, if at all. So that's why I think we're in this current tech malaise of sorts.
Yeah, and you know, I just posted a link to our internal show notes, quoting the former commissioner of the U.S. Patent Office, who said, "Everything that can be invented has been invented." This was said in 1899. Well, it sounds like we hit another roadblock.
Well, yeah, we hit these roadblocks from time to time. You can sort of see when they get hit. You know, the Renaissance roadblocks were hit and then passed, and the Industrial Revolution roadblocks were hit and passed, and Technological Revolution, you know, the invention of the integrated circuit, all of those things all of a sudden just propelled us light years ahead. And, you know, my dad and others have joked that in 1948, there really was an alien spacecraft that crashed, and every so often we just go in and steal technology, and, you know, that's how microwaves happened and all these other things. Well, maybe we've just gone through everything in that spacecraft now. And
well, that'll be sad. Everything except interstellar travel.
Yeah, that's the one thing that's why we have Space Force happening soon, you know? We're finally going to use that part. We've stripped the spacecraft of everything else.
Well, you know, and on that note, although we try not to be political in this show, I will say that, you know, one of my grumps is, well, maybe not a grump. Yeah, I guess it's a rant, since I have no actual proof this is true or not. Not that it matters anymore. But I wonder if we are so, as a whole, are so distracted now by social media issues. Not social media itself, but the issues surrounding it and political upheaval, that we've lost focus on doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it certainly seems like that sometimes. But again, I have no proof. I'm just kind of ranting and being annoyed that there's nothing interesting that I really felt like talking about. In fact, one of the things I did put a link into is, well, this might be interesting. And they go, no, that's not. So the Android tablet market died, right? It's gone.
Yeah.
Nobody, I mean, there might still be some Android tablets that are being built and sold, but nobody really cares. I certainly don't care, and I use Android every day on my phone. But one thing that is doing pretty well is Chrome OS and the Chromebooks. There's also like Chrome desktops, but nobody really cares about that. But recently, there's been a lot of noise about Google kind of re-energizing its tablet fortunes by having its partners introduce Chrome OS-based tablets. And so there's something called the Acer Chromebook Tab 10, which is basically a Chromebook with no keyboard. You know, it's a tablet. And I was thinking, you know, if this had come out 3 years ago, I might have been interested, just because Android tablets are already dead by then. But I looked at it, and I'm a Chrome OS convert. I mean, the only time I use a Mac these days to record these podcasts, the only time I use a Windows PC is at work. I rarely use a Windows PC at home anymore. The rest of the time, I'm either on an iPad or I'm on a Chromebook. But this, you know, it's like, why do I even care about a tablet running Chrome OS? Of course, I said that about Chromebooks too early on. But it was one of the things, like I said, it would have been interesting a couple years ago. Now, meh. Don't really care. Anyway.
Well, that's so encouraging.
I know.
So happy.
Yeah, and it's too bad because I really do care about Chrome OS as a technology, and I use it, like I said, every day. Mm-hmm. It's my go-to device at home. I use a Samsung Chromebook Plus I bought a year and a half ago now, I think, and enjoying it every day still, a year and a half later. At any rate, you had something that I also don't care about, but let's go.
Well, this was something I thought was interesting. Okay. So Twitter, in the, I guess, the spirit of trying to clean up a little bit of the muck that is
bots,
spam, everything else,
yeah,
is apparently deleting approximately a million or so accounts per day, which is just interesting on the size, the scope of that. But I also thought it funny because back in, I guess this was around Christmas time last year, I was curious, you know, you go on eBay and you see these groups that will sell you Twitter followers.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is interesting. You know, mm-hmm. how does this work and how fast does this work and does it work at all? I just was curious about it. So I found a listing for what was called 5,000 plus high quality Twitter followers. Now, high quality in their mind is no eggs, so each person has its own, picture. And I think each account is being followed by at least one or two other accounts, and they have, you know, they follow like 100 or 200 accounts, whatever. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting. And then I looked at the price, and the price was $7.
Okay.
And I was bored. And I thought, okay, I'm just curious. So if I lose $7, I lose $7. So
right.
I paid my $7, and then I watched my Twitter count over the next 24 hours.
Okay.
I had something like 400-some followers, maybe 500-some followers. And within 2 days, I was above 6,000 followers.
Hmm.
And today, 8 months later almost.
Right.
7 months later, I am still above 6,000 followers, and most of them are these high-quality followers.
Okay. What does that mean?
You can look, if you just look at the people who follow me,
you'll
notice that very few of them actually look like real people. They sort of look like real people until you go, and then you realize that some of them have more or fewer tweets that they've put out.
Right.
Some of them have tweeted and others really haven't. So, for example, one I just pulled up is the name is Savannah Peterson. There's a picture of some pixelated female because it was a low-res image that they put in. And the Twitter name is at XZUWJZ0E.
Mm. Mm.
And this person has a bio, they have a location, they follow 100 people, they have zero followers themselves, and they were members since September 2017. So it's interesting to me that, A, there are definitely millions of fake accounts on Twitter.
Right.
But the million, if they're doing a million a day, what worse followers are there out there than mine? I'm just shocked that none of mine have been chipped away by the supposed crackdown.
Right. And by the way, I just took a quick look while you were talking about it. There are currently 336 million Twitter accounts. So in less than a year, if they delete a million accounts a day, there would be no people left.
Mm-hmm.
So that number is dubious to me, that million a day.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't think I ever told the story on the podcast of my Twitter followers, my little experiment.
I never heard of it.
Yeah, my $7 experiment. But it's amusing to me because I kind of wondered how long will it last? You know, are these going to just go away after a month or 2 months? But no, I still have my 6,190 followers, of which I think really only about 400 are actual people I know and that follow me, and I follow most of them back. So,
yeah, you know what's interesting is that my Twitter follower number, which is never large. In fact, let me go take a look for, scintillating audio. I'm going to be searching for something while I talk. Okay, so I currently have 1,162 followers, and it's kind of been at that level for years now. It's, kind of goes up and down, a couple of followers every couple of months, but generally about 1,100 followers or so. And when I ran one of those bot checking things to see how many of them were possibly bots, it was a very low percentage. It was like, I don't know, 5% maybe out of that. So, you know, not a huge number, you know, kind of a nice number of real entities that follow me for whatever reason. I follow 878 entities, I should say, so not all are people. Some are news accounts and things. So I think my Twitter follower thing is pretty, like, real people. A lot of them who I know personally, some way don't. But anyway, the interesting to me is what's happened in Instagram, which I recently started using more often, started posting photos of stuff I see around town and so forth. Because, you know, I live in Hawaii. It's kind of pretty here. Yeah, I figured, people might enjoy some of these photos.
Kind of for it.
I notice a lot of fake, what appear to me to be fake Instagram followers. And I just don't understand the purpose of that at all. Because, it's not an auto follow back, so I'm not looking at their stuff. I do look at if somebody follows me on Instagram, I do take a look if it's a real person or not. And I would say half of them aren't real people.
This makes me curious because my Instagram is exclusively devoted to funny things I find around the internet. Okay. I don't actually post anything from real life or any pictures of my family or anything like that. It's whenever I find funny comics or, you know, anything else, that's what I post. Because I figure someone needs to – there needs to be an Instagram somewhere for someone who's just interested in funny things.
Right.
And I'm looking, and my followers are mostly regular people, it looks like. Mm. Now, I do have an interesting social media type story that we can also add in that I don't know if I've ever told. Have I ever told why Pinterest hates me?
No.
Okay, well, since we've obviously established that the news is not all that interesting to us anymore, so here's my Pinterest story. So about 6 years ago, well, actually more like four, I was doing a social media campaign for a group that I was helping out with, and they were doing a pumpkin patch fundraiser.
Okay.
So I needed pumpkin-related stuff to post on a Facebook page, one a day for every day.
Wait, Facebook or Pinterest?
Facebook. I was actually going to use Facebook for it. Yeah. We had a Facebook page set up, and it was, you know, come out to the pumpkin patch, and you could do this with the pumpkins or this with the pumpkins, whatever. Right. I thought, well, where am I going to get a bunch of curated pumpkin stuff?
Sure.
And I thought Pinterest. That's what people use Pinterest for. They pin little artsy and crafty things. So I signed up for a Pinterest account because I had to search Pinterest.
Right.
So I did all my searching. I found all my stuff. I download. I put the links up, all that. And then I never did anything else with my Pinterest accounts.
Okay.
Because I don't really, you know, Pinterest is not something I find as useful as other people. When I find stuff I like, I bookmark it or I save it or something like that. So Pinterest basically doesn't know who I am. I've never pinned anything. I've never created a board. I don't follow anyone. Random people follow me because they know me and they figure, oh, I'll follow John. But then they are very disappointed because there's nothing for them on my Pinterest.
Right.
And so Pinterest just sort of throws at me what I suppose is their default sort of, maybe you're this kind of person, maybe you're interested in this, like maybe whatever the average thing is on their platform. And I'm pretty sure that it has built a profile of me that I am a middle-aged female.
Mm-hmm.
Who is interested in alternative health remedies.
Mm.
Because every single time I open up Pinterest, whatever my first initial homepage is, it's always either related to female health, alternative, like, you know, cures for random things, or just other odd stuff that doesn't appeal to me at all. So, like, for example, I'm showing Todd right now what my Pinterest homepage is, and it's like some alternative medicine, a few things about the effects of collagen and other stuff. And I do kind of keep a list of these things. I'll take screenshots of them from time to time. I mean, there's the next one is homemade flea powder, effectively repel and kill fleas and ticks.
Well, you did have pets until recently, so I can understand that one.
I suppose, but it is interesting. When you take a social media platform that figures out who you are to show you something.
Right.
And then it has no idea who you are and can't figure out what to show you.
Right. Well, that's, you know, I once created a Pinterest account also just to see what it was about. And I'm trying to remember how to log into it. I don't remember the account name or...
You're curious what it thinks you are, too.
Yeah. Now I want to go see what it, you know, having not used it for years, what it thinks I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go look at it later since I don't have a, can't find my pad. It's in encrypted somewhere. I just got to go look for it.
It's starting to be one of those things where you just wonder about what the future of social media is going to look like when they're so reliant on who you are and then you won't tell them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's. Okay, so that's John's Pinterest story. I was going to point out something, but it's way too political, so I won't.
Yeah, you have very cynical thoughts.
I have very cynical thoughts.
Move on to.
I didn't even understand what you're trying to get with this one, John. I didn't even open the link.
So this is the time of year when Wired and other publications are coming out with what are the big features that are coming to iOS. Yeah. You know, we all know them for the last month and a half, but. Yeah. But Wired put this story up that I thought was interesting because it was talking about how basically iOS 12 is going to amp up security, and it's all about security and privacy. And it made me wonder if, you know, as we've gotten through iOS versus Android over the last 10 years, that almost 10 years they've both been around, we've kind of gotten this tug back and forth of which one's better, and then eventually, okay, they're both pretty good. And now I think they're more alike than they are separate.
Okay.
The difference, though, is I'm wondering if now the marketing is, if you want cutting-edge features, go Android. If you want privacy and security, go Apple.
Okay.
And so it seems to me that that might be the only differentiator anymore. Like if someone asks you tomorrow if they should buy a Galaxy, Samsung Galaxy or an Apple iPhone, and you're trying to give them advice, this is really the only differentiator I think I can give anymore. Is do you care about privacy and security, or do you want the latest features? iOS used to have a little bit on reliability, but I think Android's gotten fairly stable now over the last few years.
I think you're right.
So, yeah, it just kind of struck me as that would be my question to someone who was trying to make the decision, because that's really the only thing I can differentiate them on.
Well, I would say this, as a person who uses both an Android phone, a Pixel 2, and an iPhone, a 7 Plus, apps on iOS tend to be more stable still today. I don't know how many times I have to manually close an app on Android just to get it to work again.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, well, you know, there are flaky third-party things. Like I have a, I didn't even remember. I guess it's TP-Link. I have a TP-Link smart switch that's hasn't worked at Alexa in months now, by the way.
Yeah, I've got one of those too.
It works, but not just not with Echo. So the only way I can turn on and off my light now is, I mean, I guess I could unplug it and just plug the light back in. But, you know, if I still want to use a switch, the only way I can use it is to use the Casa, which I believe means house in Spanish, the Casa app, and isn't TP-Link like a Chinese company? Why do you use Spanish? Anyway, they should use a Chinese word. But the app, 100% of the time. So, you know, the light goes off at night, and the next day I want to turn the light switch back on, you know, 18 hours later or whatever. And inevitably, the app doesn't work, says it can't see the device, and there's only one to see, so it's not like it's confused. I have to go into Android's sort of task management and manually close the app and restart it, then it sees the light. 100% of the time this happens, every single day. Okay, so you say, well, that's a third-party app, it's IoT, you know, it's a lot of complications, it's talking over a network. Okay, fine. How about this one then? A little company named Google, they have an app
I've
on
heard
Android.
Of them.
Yeah, they have an app on Android called Play Store, right? This is where your applications are purchased and updated, in media, you know, just all kinds of stuff. You just go through the books, you go through the Play Store. Well, that app, every single time I want to check for app updates, I have to manually close the app using the task manager, reopen it. Otherwise, it can't update anything. Yeah. And there's probably some other things, too, on Android. And I'm using the latest Rev. You know, I've got a Pixel 2. It's using the latest Android. What am I using now? Oreo? Android O? Yeah, latest version of Android. the latest security patches. You know, every month I see a security patch on it since it says still a supported device. And I expect it will be supported for at least another year or so. But, you know, I really don't see that very often on iOS. I won't say I never see it because there are a couple of apps that I seem to recall I have to close manually sometimes just to get it to work. But it seems like it's, what's the word, endemic? It's all over the place on Android.
Yeah, it's hard to... Android, I think, is getting better, but there's still ways for it to go. But
yeah.
Like I said, my thought was just, it's interesting to me how features really aren't what we care about so much anymore as these meta things around the edges.
Yeah.
You know, security, privacy, you know, how cutting edge is something. Because I think of a lot of the technologies that Google has embraced for Android that it jumped on too early, and so we saw it briefly, and then it went away, and now other companies are coming to it, like facial ID and things like that. I mean, that was something that Android had. Android, I think, 4 or 5 had face recognition, and then most of the developers took it out because it wasn't as robust as it needed to be. So it's really sort of one of those things where, if someone asks me tomorrow, should I buy iPhone or Samsung Galaxy, I only ask really two questions: what they're interested in, and also what their friends have.
Yeah,
because it is easier if your friends all have iOS, it can be a lot easier if you're also on iOS.
Absolutely.
Versus if everyone's on Android or if there's a good mix, then it's really irrelevant.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, your ecosystem. If you know you already have an iPad, why are you switching to Android? It just does really work better with an iPhone, you know, in terms of being able to pick up a call on your iPad and things like that, which I have done. You know, my phone's sitting 20 feet away and I happen to be using my iPad Pro to, you know, read the news or whatever. And my phone rings or my iPad rings and I can answer to my iPad. By the way, a question, since you're a much longer Apple Watch user, do you ever answer phone calls on your watch?
I have. It's usually when I know it's an important call and I can't get to my phone in time, or if my hands are full and my nose is open, I can hit, you know, the green accept button and start talking.
That's actually pretty talented because you can't actually see it as your nose approaches the phone.
You've got to line it up pretty well, but it does work. You just have to be good at what you do with it.
Well, if you ever got stopped by the police, you can definitely pass their sobriety test. You know, you can look at this. I can touch my nose with my watch. But, okay. Okay, so the last item that I found for today, as I said, I was pretty hard-pressed to find anything I wanted to talk about. I chose not so much because I have a lot of interest, but I know that, well, I guess I do. But I know John has a lot of interest. And I should note that this is about the Girl Scouts. My daughter was a Girl Scout for 8 years, I think. But at any rate, Girl Scouts, at least this one troop in, I think, Texas, are learning to pick locks and hack computers. Now, John is one of his many hobbies is picking locks. And I found it, I just said, wow, John, I don't know if John saw this. It's in Popular Mechanics, so it's not like some weird, you know, fringe publication. And I thought, wow, John might find this interesting that, you know, this woman is teaching these kids as part of kind of a cybersecurity boot camp, teaching them both about computer security and, you know, physical security, lock security.
Well, I am a big believer that the way that you get things to be more secure, whether they are locks or computers or whatever you are working with, is by getting people knowledge of how those things work.
Yeah.
Because that eliminates what... many refer to as security through obscurity.
Oh, yeah.
And, for example, earlier this week, I was doing some reading, and I came across a frequently asked questions page that a lock manufacturer has. And the lock manufacturer, the question was, what is bumping a lock? And bumping is a technique that locksmiths have known about for years. It's basically a way of taking a key that's cut a certain way and hitting it and trying to bump the pin stacks to where they need to be to open the lock. And it's one of those little secrets that locksmiths had forever that if you called them out to your door, and it could be something they could try for a few minutes to see if that would work before they have to start picking. It'd be faster than picking or drilling.
Right.
So one of the things, what is it? This has recently come out in the last 5 years. People have started knowing about it beyond locksmiths and lockpickers. And the website struck me as kind of humorous because they were talking about, before this leaked out to the public, it was fine because only locksmiths knew about it. And I thought that just, it was basically like, now that people know about it, we're figuring out ways to protect you against it. I'm thinking you should have been figuring out ways to protect people against it 30, 40 years ago when it first came out versus waiting until it was widely known. That would have made everyone secure as if, 5 years ago, bumping came out and it was, oh, by the way, you have to use a lock that was made before 1980 because they fixed it then.
Right.
So this whole idea of if we just allow certain people to know things, then no one will find them out is something that we see time and time again.
Oh, absolutely.
It just doesn't work. And when it comes to hacking and lockpicking, they're no different than putting a puzzle together. You're solving a puzzle. You can either be solving a puzzle with pieces in front of you, or you can be using a little piece of metal to move a pin inside a lock and seeing if that's the move you need to make to open the lock or not. The one difference is putting a puzzle together, the only thing you can really do with it maybe is frame it and put it on the wall.
Yeah.
Once you know how to pick a lock, if you get locked out of your house, you have a skill that can get you back into your house. And also, it tells you maybe I shouldn't buy some of those cheaper locks. If I go to the store and they only have two brands and I know one of those brands is really poor quality, I won't buy that brand. Because for most people, I assume you go to the store, you see a bunch of locks, you have no idea which ones are good or which ones aren't.
No, I don't. I don't.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do a show since we have no tech to talk about.
One of these, tech?
Yeah, we should talk about, I don't know anything about it, so I'm sure I've learned something useful. And it'd also be useful, which is a lot less than I see in the news these days. So, at least tech news.
But yeah, as you noted in the show notes, the two rules of lockpicking, if anyone's interested in getting into it, simply two rules that will keep you safe pretty much all the time. One, don't pick a lock that doesn't belong to you.
Mm-hmm.
And two, don't pick a lock that's in use. So don't pick your front door lock. Don't, pick the padlock that you use at the gym to
secure your locker. Because
you could break it? Yeah, if you break it, which it's not super easy to do, but it can be done. When you're picking a lock, you can mess the lock up, and until you know how to disassemble them and put them back together again, you're kind of stuck if you break them.
Okay, so here's a question if you're picking a lock. Mm-hmm. Can the tool that you're using break off in the lock and jam it, essentially?
Yes, it can. That's another reason why you don't pick a lock that's in use.
Right.
Because if you're picking a lock that's in use and that happens, you need there are tools called extractors that can extract broken keys and also other things. But if you don't have a tool like that, you are kind of out of luck.
Okay. So I guess in this case, we will end this podcast with a modification to an old aphorism, which starts off, I think, you can pick your nose, you can pick your friends. But don't pick any old lock.
Yeah. Don't pick your front door lock.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you want evidence of why that's a good case, go to the Reddit subforum on lockpicking. And about every week, someone has messed up their front door because they didn't follow that rule.
Hey, before I forget, I should have mentioned in my podcast last night that I still haven't posted. With Jay Stone. Jay and I recorded.
Then there's still time if you haven't posted it yet.
Yeah. Well, I guess
Take
I could
back
record
and mention it now.
But I'll mention in this podcast, I should mention in the Comics News podcast, and it does have a more techie tone than anything else. So for the few people who have not yet seen, and I think John's one of them, who have not yet seen the Avengers movie, Infinity Wars. John, mm-hmm. did you see it?
I have not seen it yet.
Okay.
Nope.
So John's only a few people, but For those who have seen it, and there are hundreds of millions of, I think almost a billion people now have seen it. It's been out long. This is not a spoiler. So at the end of the movie, half the people in the universe disappear. Not on Earth, not in the solar system, the entire universe. Half of all people disappear. So on Reddit, there's a Reddit group, I guess it talks about Thanos, which is a well-known villain in the Marvel Universe. It wasn't created just for the movies. It was created years ago by, I think, Jim Starlin. And there's a Reddit subgroup devoted to Thanos, the villain of the movie and years of comic book stories. And they have decided that they're going to randomly remove half the members of the group. You know, in solidarity with the movie and the story that it's based on, Infinity Gauntlet, the comic book story. So anyway, that's a tech aspect. So if you are a member of the Thanos subgroup in Reddit, I hope you survive the Great Purge. Mm-hmm. And let us know how it goes. Alrighty, that's Comic Views, that's Mobile Views Podcast 260, and we'll talk to you next time.